Davis Arts Council presents Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, adapted by Melissa Leilani Larson, sponsored by Layton City Ramp. Stave 1, Marley's Ghost. Once upon a time, on Christmas Eve, old Ebenezer Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold and bleak outside, fog pouring in every chink and keyhole. Scrooge had a very small fire, but his clerk's fire was so very much smaller. The clerk tried to warm himself at the candle, but failed. Ebenezer Scrooge. Ugh, he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, and solitary as an oyster. Nobody ever stopped him on the street to say, "How are you?" And Scrooge liked it that way.
"A Merry Christmas, Uncle!"
The cheerful voice of Scrooge's nephew, Fred, broke through the cold and fog.
"Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!"
Fred invited his uncle to Christmas dinner the next day, but Scrooge refused to celebrate Christmas. It was a waste of money. Money that people like his nephew didn't have in the first place. What right did his poor young man have to be merry? Scrooge, on the other hand, was rich, and Christmas time meant that well-meaning people came asking for donations to help the poor. But Scrooge gave nothing. He didn't make merry at Christmas, and he would not make others merry. His taxes funded prisons and workhouses. Why should he give more? If the poor would rather die than go there, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. It was time to close up for the night. Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, hoped to celebrate Christmas with a day off. But Scrooge saw the holiday as a poor excuse to pick a man's pocket every 25th of December. Scrooge lived in a dim suite of rooms that had once belonged to his deceased business partner, Jacob Marley. It was gloomy, but darkness is cheap. Scrooge liked it. He dressed for bed and sat before the fire. A clanking noise came from deep down below, as if someone were dragging a heavy chain over the wine casks in the cellar. The noise grew louder, coming up the stairs, coming straight towards Scrooge's door. Without a pause, Jacob Marley's ghost passed into the room before his eyes. Marley looked the same as Scrooge remembered, but he was transparent and wore a heavy chain around his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, made of cash boxes, padlocks, and heavy purses. It was a chain he had forged in life and was now doomed to bear as he wandered for eternity. But, Marley warned, Scrooge had a chance of escaping the same fate. Over the next 3 days, he would be haunted by three spirits. Spirits whose business was Scrooge's welfare. Without another word, Marley's ghost wrapped his chain around his arm and moved to the window. Scrooge watched as his former partner floated out upon the bleak and dark night. The air was filled with phantoms, wandering and moaning as they went. Everyone wore chains like Marley's ghost. Scrooge had known many of them in life. Their misery was clear as they faded into the night. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door the ghost had entered. It was double locked. Locked with his own hands. And the bolts were undisturbed. Exhausted, he went right to bed and fell asleep. Stave 2, the first of the three spirits. When Scrooge awoke, it was still dark. Had he slept through the whole day only to wake the next night? Suddenly, the bell tolled one. Lights flashed up in the room and the curtains of his bed were drawn. Scrooge found himself face to face with an unearthly visitor, the ghost of Christmas past. It was a strange figure. Like a little old man, its hair was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle. It wore a tunic of the purest white, trimmed in summer flowers. The ghost moved to the window, calling for Scrooge to follow. They passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road. The city had vanished. It was a clear winter day with snow upon the ground. Scrooge recognized Pevery Gate, the post, the tree. He'd been there as a boy. Several boys on ponies rode by shouting to each other, "Merry Christmas!" as they parted ways. Scrooge was so happy to see them. He called them each by name, but the boys did not hear him. "There are but shadows of things that have been," said the ghost. The ghost led Scrooge to an old brick schoolhouse. Inside, a lonely boy read near a feeble fire. Scrooge sat down and wept to see his poor, forgotten self as he used to be. A little girl darted in, throwing her arms around the boy's neck. This was Scrooge's dear sister Fanny, a delicate creature with a big heart. She had died as a grown woman, leaving one child, his nephew, Fred. Within a moment, the ghost led Scrooge through the busy thoroughfares of the city, its streets lit and dressed for Christmas. They stopped at a certain warehouse door. Scrooge knew the place instantly. He had been apprenticed there. Inside, an old gentleman sat behind a high desk. Scrooge recognized his former employer at once, old Mr. Fezziwig. Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and called out, "Yo, ho there, Ebenezer!" Scrooge's former self, now a grown young man, came briskly in and helped clear the room for the Fezziwig's annual Christmas party. It wasn't long before the room was crowded with happy faces, and there were dances and cakes and cold roast and minced pies and plenty of beer. Scrooge's heart and soul were in the scene, and with his former self. He remembered everything and enjoyed everything. Old Fezziwig, Scrooge realized, had the power to make his employee's service a pleasure or a toil. Scrooge suddenly wished that he could say a word or two to his own clerk just then. The ghost and Scrooge again stood in the open air, and again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now. A man in the prime of life who, it seemed, had forgotten how to smile. He was not alone, sitting by a young woman named Belle. In her eyes there were tears. Ebenezer and Belle were contracted to be married, but when the contract was made, they were both younger, and he was another man. Belle had loved the man he had been before, but his desire for wealth had altered him. She wished him well and left him. Tormented, Scrooge begged to be removed from that place. He wrestled with the ghost and found himself back in his own room. Overcome by weariness, he dropped onto the bed and sank into a heavy sleep. Stave 3, the second of the three spirits. Scrooge awoke in mid-snore as the clock again tolled one. Not wanting to be taken by surprise, he watched for the expected ghost to come. But none appeared. 5 minutes? 10 minutes? A quarter of an hour went by, yet nothing came. He realized an unfamiliar light was streaming under the door and shuffled towards it. The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called his name, and he entered. It was his own room, but it had undergone a transformation. The walls and ceilings were hung with holly and mistletoe and ivy, and heaped upon the floor were turkeys, geese, great joints of meat, minced pies, plum puddings, cherry-cheeked apples, and juicy oranges. A glorious, jolly giant sat upon it all, the ghost of Christmas present.
"Come in," exclaimed the ghost. "Come in, and know me better, man."
The spirit instructed Scrooge to touch his robe. Scrooge did so, grabbing on tight, and the room and everything in it vanished instantly as the ghost led Scrooge to Bob Cratchit's house. Within, Mrs. Cratchit and her children, dressed in their threadbare best, prepared their meager Christmas dinner. Bob came in just then, with the youngest Cratchit, Tiny Tim, upon his shoulder. Tiny Tim, Scrooge saw, leaned his crooked body on a little crutch.
"God bless us, every one," said Tiny Tim,
and his father held him close. Scrooge turned to the ghost with an interest he had never felt before. Would Tiny Tim live? The ghost, its eyes grave, could see a vacant seat near the fire and a little crutch without an owner. Scrooge pleaded with the ghost to spare the sickly child.
"If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die," said the ghost. "If he's going to die, he better do it and decrease the surplus population."
Scrooge's own words rang in his ears, and grief overcame him. Bob Cratchit raised his cup in praise of the founder of the feast, his employer, Mr. Scrooge. But Mrs. Cratchit would have none of it, and the mention of Scrooge's name cast a shadow on the party for a full 5 minutes. The ghost nodded, and Scrooge grabbed onto its robe. The ghost flew fast over rocky shores and rough sea. Terrified, Scrooge held on for dear life. The sound of the waves receded, and he heard a hearty laugh. Scrooge found himself in a bright room. Both the room and the laugh belonged to his nephew, Fred. Surrounded by his wife and good friends, they sang songs, played games, and had a jolly time. The ghost was pleased to see Scrooge playing along with the games and answered aloud, though no one could hear him. In another moment, Scrooge and the ghost were traveling across the night. Much they saw, and far they went, always with a happy end. The ghost visited the sick and cheered them, gave hope to the poor in the workhouses, and blessed the criminals in prison. Scrooge watched all of this and learned from it. After a while, Scrooge noticed that the ghost's face, once young and bright, was now lined with age. Before he could ask about it, a bell chimed midnight. Startled, Scrooge looked for the ghost, but couldn't find him. At the last stroke of 12, he lifted up his eyes to behold a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground toward him. Stave 4, The Last of the Spirits. The phantom gravely approached. It was shrouded in a deep black cloak, which concealed its head and face. Nothing was visible, save one outstretched hand. Scrooge was filled with a solemn dread. He knew that he was in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Scrooge tried to speak to the ghost, but it did not reply. It only pointed with its hand. Onward. The phantom moved away, and Scrooge, trembling, followed it. City streets sprang up around them. Scrooge recognized several of the people they passed and heard snatches of their conversations.
I thought he'd never die.
What's he done with all his money?
Ain't left it to me, that's all I know.
It's likely to be a very cheap funeral. I don't know anybody who'll go to it.
The ghost moved to another part of town, a dreary place Scrooge had never gone. The houses were dark and wretched, and the streets were full of filth. The whole quarter reeked of crime and misery. Scrooge stood beside the spirit in a dingy shop. A gray-haired man weighed and judged the junk that people brought in to sell. Scrooge watched as a laundry woman brought in a large bundle and asked the man to take a look. Inside was a dead man's bed curtains and blankets. She had taken them because their owner no longer felt the cold, and because she needed the money. Scrooge shuddered and stepped back. He found himself in a different room. He tripped, almost falling, on a bare, uncurtained bed. Was this the same bed that the washerwoman had robbed? On it lay a body covered with a ragged sheet. The ghost's steady hand pointed at the body, as if it wanted Scrooge to pull the sheet away. Scrooge could not bear it. He looked away. Was any person saddened by this man's death? As if in answer to his question, the phantom pointed. Scrooge followed the bony finger and realized it was aimed at Bob Cratchit's house. Mrs. Cratchit sat sewing with her children, all but one. They were very quiet. Even the littlest Cratchits sat still as statues. Bob came in, a sad smile on his face. "My dear," said Bob, "it will do you good to see how green a place it is. I promised Tim that we would walk there on Sunday." Poor Bob broke down when he cried, and Mrs. Cratchit kissed him, and his family surrounded him. Disheartened, Scrooge turned to the ghost, who moved on. They were outside an old churchyard. The neglected gravestones crammed close together, they're overgrown with weeds. The spirits pointed down at a grave. Scrooge trembled. "Are these the shadows of things that will be?" he wondered. "Or are they the shadows of things that may only be?" The spirit, immovable, still pointed at the grave. Scrooge crept towards it and, following the finger, read upon the gravestone his own name. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, no. Scrooge fell to his knees in terror. He began to shake. "Good spirit, assure me that I may yet change these shadows that you have shown me. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. Oh, tell me that I may erase the writing on this stone." Desperately, Scrooge clutched at the phantom's hand. The hand tried to pull away, but Scrooge would not let go. As the ghost pulled away, Scrooge saw it shrink and collapse, and he blinked and saw that he was holding on to his own bedpost.
Stave 5. The end of it. The bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. The bed curtains still there, hanging around the bed. Oh, what a relief. Morning sunlight streamed through the windows, and church bells pealed in the distance. So many bells! He ran to the window and threw it open. No fog, no mist. It was a clear, bright, cold day. Christmas Day! The spirits had done their work all in one night, and he had not missed it. He called down to a boy in the street and sent him to buy the prize turkey hanging in a shop window. He would arrange to have it sent to the Cratchits as a surprise. What a fine joke it would be! Scrooge was so happy that he didn't know what to do. He felt light and giddy, even a little drunk on joy. He tried to get dressed, but his hands shook with excitement. Shaving was not an easy task. He laughed and he cried in the same breath. Really, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh. At last, he was dressed all in his best. As Scrooge walked the familiar streets, he had never dreamed of any walk or anything at all could give him so much happiness. He had not gone far when he saw the gentleman who had come to his office collecting donations for the poor the night before. Scrooge felt a pang of guilt and stopped the man. He promised a donation, whispering the amount in the man's ear. The man gasped in surprise, and Scrooge smiled. That afternoon, Scrooge passed his nephew's door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock. When the maid opened the door, he went straight to the dining room and called Fred's name. He worried that his nephew would not let him in, but Fred shook his hand heartily and welcomed him to the party. Dinner was wonderful, as was the music and the games. It was like Scrooge had come home. Early the next morning, though, Scrooge was back to work in the counting house. He sat at his desk, with the door open wide, so that he could catch Bob arriving late. Finally, Bob dashed in, nervous and breathless, a whole 18 minutes late. Scrooge growled, and Bob apologized. Christmas came only once a year, after all, and he had made rather merry yesterday. Scrooge shook his head. He could not stand for this sort of thing any longer. Bob trembled. But then Scrooge clapped him on the back and wished him a Merry Christmas. He pledged to raise Bob's salary and sent him out to buy more coal for the fire. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and paid them little heed. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. It was always said of Mr. Scrooge that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. Adapted from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol by Melissa Leilani Larson for Davis Arts Council's Active Pages Storytelling Program. Read by Teresa Sanderson. Original music by Michael G. Levitt. Audio recording, engineering, and design by Joe Killian. Davis Arts Council thanks our partners in everything we do. Layton City, First Community Bank, Discover Davis, Davis County, the Val A. and Edith D. Green Foundation, and LSI. To find out more about the arts programming provided by the Davis Arts Council, visit davisarts.org.